This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald. Here's a segment from our show, Kelly and Company, that airs weekdays from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio. From Connecting the Dots here at the Mars Discovery District, Ramya Muthan, Kelly McDonald, host of Kelly and Company, and hopefully you're enjoying the program. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, check us out whenever you can via podcast. Always a great way to see what we're doing and to join in on what we're talking about. I do have an announcement, as a matter of fact, though, that we need to make, Ramya.
Okay.
First mention of this on our program, and what a better place to do it at a CNIB event. Thursday, November 14th at 2 p.m. Eastern, join us as we celebrate the grand opening of the CNIB's newest hub in Sudbury, Ontario. Learn more about this accessible space as we chat with organizers and those who have supported the creation of this new hub. And if you're in the area, of course, drop by and say hi to us. We're going to be doing the broadcast starting at 2 p.m. Eastern right here on AMI Audio. And, of course, later on you can always check out the podcast if by chance you can't be in person. Well, we've got a lady sitting across from me who I've known for quite a while. And when I first started to work in Toronto, I started to bump into this lady in different stories we would cover and different subjects we'd talk about over at Ryerson. And there were so many cool, interesting things. I think that's Deb, the first place that I met Deb Fels, professor over there. Now, Deb, give me proper title now, please.
I am I'm a professor in the School of Information Technology Management in the Faculty of Management at Ryerson. I'm also the director of the Inclusive Media and Design Center there.
So cool. when I first met you, there were so many different projects that you guys were working on over there in Inclusive. Give us a bit of the history of that department and how it came to be and how you started things, because, I mean, I think that plays a lot into what's going on with it today.
Yes, you're right. So the Inclusive Media and Design Center started in about 1996, I think, yes, when I started at Ryerson. And my research is around inclusive media and inclusive design and some work in assistive technologies. So there's a wide variety of projects that have been there and are going on now. We started with building a robot that link kids in the hospital with their regular classroom.
Wow. And I think I remember that because I remember the discussion that, you know, that would be something that would really help kids just, you know, when you're sick, especially people dealing with cancer, something that may keep a child in the hospital a long time. That was that facilitator in that sense, that to help and make sure to keep the child not losing a year.
Right, well, you know, there's the academic part,
yeah,
which is important, and often they can get that separately. But what they miss is their friends.
Right, the interaction.
You know, sort of what's right. Going on in the class and, you know, who's doing what. And when they miss that, it's really hard to come back because you're kind of a stranger again. And, you know, you have to, you know, learn who the friends are, and you have to, you know, everybody's grown and done different things, and you've got to learn all that stuff. And if you have to keep doing that on an ongoing basis, like dialysis patients, for instance, then it's really hard, especially as a little one, you know, to try and manage that. And so they end up not going and missing out on that social and academic part of school that's so important.
How does that inclusive design department, in the sense of, again, discoveries, things that you guys have shown you could do over the years and are all the time working hard at, one would say, how does it justify being there? We know how important it is, those of us with disabilities, but when it comes to the upper people who make these decisions as to programs, where funding's going to go to, how have you guys felt that you've had to hang in there, and how have you?
Well, that's a really good question. And because it's a research center,
right,
it's centered around research rather than providing services or things like that. So, you know, our job is to discover interesting questions that should be answered and to frame that in the world of research and motivate it around, you know, why it's important for society, why it's important for pushing research forward. And because we tend to do a lot of work in the technology sector, how that technology then can be used in Canada in particular, but in the rest of the world. So, you know, we need to write grant applications and apply for funding and compete with the mathematicians, the engineers working on you know, nuclear stuff, the social scientists working on the latest gang problems. And so true.
It's actually here.
We've you know, we've been pretty successful at, because you know, we have, you know, the theory, we have the practice, and we have the technology mixed in together.
So you're here at the conference. Let's talk about your presentation, and we know your sidekick for the presentation, Emily Harney. What kinds of things are you guys talking about?
Okay, so...
Or did you talk about, I should say. It's past.
It is past. Let me set the context for you. I've been working in the research on audio description for a long time now, and that's where we met, Kelly. And, you know, what motivated that... my participation or the lab's participation in this research is I had a number of blind friends tell me that they hated audio description and they always turned it off. And I'm like, okay, well, that's interesting, and I wonder why that's the case. You know, what is going on in the world of inclusive media and audio description that is turning people off of it who are supposed to be the consumers
literally,
of it?
Literally, yeah.
Yes,
were
literally.
You remote, Ramya? Did you feel that way when you were younger about it? Or?
No, because I had no clue about audio description. I just wasn't interested in... I would almost push myself away from entertainment because of the lack of audio description.
Wow. Yeah, see, but whereas I was just happy, oh, gee, this is kind of cool, because of the era where it would never existed, you were more fussy about it.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And so, you know, we went through and are still going through, you know, the process of figuring out that question. And for us, you know, in the lab at Ryerson, we don't have any skin in this game. We don't, it's not our, we don't provide it as a service. We don't make any money from it, unlike, you know, broadcasters and other people who actually, you know, it's their business.
Right.
So I could take a more, you know, I could take a view of it that didn't necessarily have to be concerned about whether it was going to, what the impact on my business was going to be. And so I was lucky that way. And so we could play around a little bit in this field and not have to worry about, you know, the next broadcast and how people were going to react. So, you know, we taken a pretty deep dive into this domain and involved, you know, a number of people who are blind and low vision, broadcasters, theater people, actors. You know, Ryerson has a theater school, so we work with them, and we have a radio and television school, and we work with them. So we can do a lot of different things in audio description. And the one thing that was important to me around audio description was that I didn't want it to be like captioning.
Right, no.
And in terms of, it's not captioning, obviously, but in terms of the politics and the environment and how it was perceived by the outside community. Because it's more than an assistive technology, which is what captioning is. And in terms of the way the creative works for audio description, it's much more complicated than captioning is.
Right.
Captioning is a fairly straightforward process where you're taking the words that are spoken and converting them into text.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There is no room for interpretation. Well, there's limited room for interpretation, let's put it that way.
But there's no hard and fast rules for audio description.
There's not. Well, there are just a couple.
Yeah.
But basically, it's a creative process. Somebody has to decide what to describe, when to describe it, what vocabulary to use, what cadence to use, what style.
Yes.
So there's a whole lot of decisions to make. And
sometimes in concert with someone writing or directing a project is the ideal thing originally, if everything could be written.
Right.
With a description in mind, second best, with enough room to move in a project, especially live description, to be able to be flexible.
Right. And, you know, the research that we've done shows that when the creative team, particularly the director, is involved, you get a fairly high-quality product that fits with the show, as you mentioned. It's not something that's done outside of the show. It's part of the production process.
Exactly.
And it should be, because it is. That's how a blind audience consumes that show.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like costumes and set and all those other things, being having audio description as an integrated part of the whole process of production makes it, first of all, interesting to the creative team, so they own it. They don't want to give it away, and you know, it becomes something that they've thought about, made decisions about, and given direction to the person who may be writing the audio description script or voicing it.
What do you think is the challenge that stands out the most in making that that statement, though? Like wanting it to, you know, pushing for audio description to be part of that production process. What is the challenge that you're finding is the hardest thing to get through to people?
Actually, when you talk to the director and the producer group, there's no problem. They embrace it significantly, and
they've known about audio description.
It's more than that. It's their show,
yeah,
and they want to have control over all of the aspects of their show. And if audio description is conveying their show to an audience, they want control of that.
Right.
So that's usually not the problem. The problem is, of course, money, as always, getting the funding, because if they haven't thought about it when they were doing budgets, and now it's getting introduced, they got to figure out how to squeeze that in. So one of the things that I would like to try and do is to have, in particular, audio description, because of that creative nature of it, integrated into the training process for actors and directors and people in the film industry and things like that. So they learn about how important it is and what it is and where it fits within what they're going to be doing. So we're working on that.
So many of us out there want that hope that it's coming, Deb. As you say, it's easier to talk to those guys. It's always hard to talk to the money, the people searching out money or asked to spend the money to make these things possible.
You're right. But I think that if it's part of the original planning process, it makes it an easier ask.
Right.
Then, you know, the industry that's grown up around audio description has come from the reader services. And they have a fairly strong convention, and it's been around for a long time. And they've kind of ported that into the audio description world. And it's nowhere near like what you would do as a reader.
Right.
And so we've run up against some of that sort of conventional thinking about, you know, I want, you know, the this is best. I know what's best for the blind people.
Yes,
and, of course. And that's still a little bit around, but it's changing a lot. The work that we've done with the research, so that we've got evidence about, you know, what works and what doesn't work very well, we've translated that into an ISO standard, and now we're working on this with the Certified Audio Describer group in the U.S., to try and provide that evidence and those techniques that we've learned a lot about.
And in North America, that's the way to go, isn't it? Start with them. And hopefully strengthening their situation over there, because there's not as strong as legislation there in certain areas of getting description out there, but yet more perfected.
Well, you know, that's an interesting point. In Canada and some in the U.S., you know, for the broadcasters, the Canadian Radio, Television and Telecommunications Commission, the CRTC, has regulations about what broadcasters are supposed to do. And the, you know, for current licenses, the renewal of licenses, audio description has to be provided for primetime shows between 7 p.m. and 11 p.m. So that's a good thing. But the problem is that's only quantity. It says how many, but it doesn't say how good.
Yes. We've been dealing with that. We've been hearing, and we know what requests have been made. Deb, how can people learn more about inclusive design over there at Ryerson and what you guys are doing?
Well, they can always come for a visit to Ryerson. Anybody's welcome to visit. We have a website, of course. That's www.imdc.ca.
Awesome.
And there's an inclusive media course series that we're putting on through our Chang School of Continuing Education. And you're welcome to go and take a look at that if you want to learn more about inclusive design and how to be an audio describer and, and how to be a real-time captionist.
I've known Deb Fells for quite a while, learned a lot over that time, and I suggest folks do that. Thanks for making
time
for us here on the show.
Thanks for having me. Nice to see you.
Yeah, you too. Good luck with everything.
Thank you.
Deb Fells, nice conversation as we roundtabled it a little bit here, folks, at Connecting the Dots. In a moment, in honor of Connecting the Dots, Tom Decker is going to be dropping in. He's going to go from Braille and tactile graphics to touch screens and taptics. What? Well, he'll fill us in after this. You've been listening to Kelly and Company. If you're hooked, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast platform. And be sure to leave us a rating and review. Or you can listen live from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.